The following program, Collabor Action Radio, is sponsored by Collabor Action and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
Radio. Yes. Let's just all take a breath and inhale. Hold it. And then just let it all out. Let it out of your toes. Welcome to Collabor Action Radio. We are here at the Six Corners of Art, Activism, and Social Change. That was DJ Lady D with the opening theme song. And thank you so much for joining us on WCPT 820 AM. If you're listening live, we are alive. Let's not forget. And I'm sure I will forget in about 90 seconds. But right now, I'm very excited for the show. I have a good friend and collaborator piping in from another city. We are taping the Zoom, so we'll be able to cut it and post and match it all up. David Desmalchian is joining us here at Collabor Action Radio. And let me tell you something, you know, I love this man. I think I know this man. And he's doing a lot of interviews right now. And I'm the artistic director of Collabor Action, for gosh darn it. So I had to really think about what we're going to talk about. And, you know, stick around. Dave will be joining us shortly. We are here on Chicago's Progressive Talk Radio. And we're also streaming live right now on Facebook and YouTube. You can check that out. But it will just be a headshot of David. You'll have to stay tuned for the post-production magic to merge Zoom and radio into a thing. And then you can, this is episode 42, folks. That's 21 times two. All right. And you can catch this very shortly on Collabor Action Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Like I said, the YouTube, you can go back and watch the other ones. One day we'll have even really good cameras in here, and those will look like magic. But today we have a different form of magic. And there's so much going on in the air. And the thing about David, I mean, this is a dude who, first of all, he's one of the nicest, most genuine people you'll ever meet. Nobody walks away from meeting this guy and goes, wow, that guy was a jerk. He listens because he cares. And he has had some of the most impressive social media rants about political and social inequity that I've ever, I mean, he moves people when he gets going. So I can't wait to find out what's on his heart right now. And, you know, the career trajectory, I think they call it slope. It's a measurement of up versus over, X over Y. Is that X, Y? No, Y over X. His slope just keeps on going and going and going and going. And it's because he's been building his career the right way as an artist, and everybody who works with him, myself included, is like, wow, can't wait to work with that guy again. It just made me feel alive. And yet he's kind of a scary, dark guy. He's like the dark angel. And we're going to have fun. So hang around. Collab Action Radio is sponsored by the Joseph and Bessie Feinberg Foundation and donors and members like you. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and this radio show is a piece of programming that you can buy ads on or sponsor. And the deals are really actually pretty amazing when you look at all the different ways you can reach people that care about art and social change. It's kind of a nice little nexus there for people that happen to be proactive. And what do proactive people do? They like to support great things, they like to buy great things, and they like to share great things. So advertise with us. Today's episode is sponsored by AV Chicago, Chicago's leading provider of AV production, event management services, super gear, and super gear geeks. Like Jeremy Goetz, founding Collabor Action company member, DePaul Theater alum. Collabor Action has a strong DePaul River that runs through our forest, and excited to continue that tradition. Ethos Collective is a purpose-driven destination and event management company that seeks to become a trusted strategic ally to your business. They're great if you need to plan a big event or a wedding, or you're bringing 30 people in from another country. You got to do it right. Go to Ethos Event Collective. Collabor Action, we are a 27-year-old nonprofit. Our mission is to build knowledge, empathy, dialogue, and action around the things that need it the most. And a lot of those things have to do with different forms of oppression that a lot of them roll down the mountain, from colonialism to classism to racism. And then they start going all over the place, like ableism and ageism, the thing that nobody, if you're lucky enough to wake up every day, can hide from. And, you know, even as I look at myself here with my gray beard, I look a lot different than I did when I first was cutting it up with David over at the Chopin Theater in the beginning of this century. Lavanna Madrid is coming to Pritzker Pavilion as a part of the Millennium Park 20th anniversary season. Sandra Delgado, directed by Cheryl Lynn Bruce with Carpaccio y Su Supercombo. Join us on August 23rd for this free show. We have room for 11,000 people, so please come a little early. There will be DJ Julio Bishop. He's going to be doing a salsa backwards. He's going to start like with 2020, and he's going to play music backwards to 1960. Hope to see you there. Collabor Action's got a bunch of other things going on, and we have a big announcement about a space. We have found a space, and I can't announce it yet, but I'm just teasing a little bit more of it. And can't wait to share that space with Double D when destiny brings us back together again. That's David Dasmalchian, by the way. That's what I call him. I don't know if anybody else calls him that. Probably pretty regular. And this guy, I run into people that know this guy everywhere. Like, oh yeah, my wife went to high school with David. I met a filmmaker who told me that a couple weeks ago. So let's go ahead and get him on the show. Are we ready to bring David in? Is that something that David, speak? Are you there? I don't hear him. He's not there. David is going to do silent radio today, folks. It will be, it'll be one of the most magical things you've never heard before. Silent radio. Go ahead, David. Take it away. No, I'm kidding. We're getting his clean feed in, and I do have a bio to read along the way. Once we get his clean feed in, he's there in the portal. David Dasmalchian, award-winning actor, writer, and producer. I'm doing my bio voiceover, David, by the way. David Dasmalchian got his big break in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight in 2008, reunited in 2023's Oppenheimer. He then made his mark in the DC universe, starring as iconic polka dot man in James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. Most recently, he was seen on the big screen as Wojciech in Last Voyage of Demeter and Stephen King's Boogeyman. The thing you need to know right now and go out and see immediately is a film called Late Night with the Devil. I saw it, and it's a super awesome horror film made today, feels like yesterday, and David plays kind of a leading man. He's like a regular guy. It's like David. And right now it says something in the clean feed. We're just going to fix this on the air. This is a tech moment. It says hit start on clean feed, and it says start. Paul, he's there. He's trying to get in. Do you see him?
He should click the link.
Oh, click start, David. Oh, he did. Do I need to start it?
No. I'm in it. I'm just waiting on him.
Huh. Should we have him call on the phone, and then we'll transfer him over to clean feed as we go?
Give me a moment. Yeah, if you want to do phone, I can call him.
All right. Or should he... Is that better than...
I don't have an email address for him, so I don't know where it is.
Oh, yeah, or I can give him the phone number, or I'll give it to you.
Yeah, the phone number, yeah.
Is that the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
All right, David, I'm going to put the phone number into the chat and just call in. The clean feed wasn't so clean. Folks, live radio without a net is theater. And theater is life. And David went to the DePaul Theater School, where he had some life. And while he was around town, he got cast in a show called Sketchbook, directed by Jimmy McDermott, written by... Oh, no, it was in Sketchbook. It was called The Wedding of Laverne and Gianni. It was fabulous. And that's how we got to meet David.
He's on the line.
Oh, I can't hear him.
I mean, he's still on the line with our screener.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what they're talking about.
All right. Let's just bring him in live on the rate on the phone.
Okay.
I hear him.
All right.
Hi, David.
The Dark Angel is here. Hey, man.
Hey, brother. What's happening?
Technology is wild. I love it.
You know, you're more of a. I mean, let's get a little like analog. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got an old Victrola over here. I'm going to play for some background sounds. That would have been something we've done at the Chopin. Get like an old vintage Victrola and
how does
gotten
that
cranked up.
Yeah, how does that Victrola sound? Do you have that in you?
It cracks. Hi, Anthony. It's so good to see you, my friend.
What is going on, brother?
Hey, man, the 42nd episode, I'm honored. It's divisible by seven, and I love being your 42nd. I feel 42nd episode, it's almost like, it feels like we've probably been 42 years since we started doing theater together in Chicago.
In theater years, it's like 65. I mean...
You're right.
And, I look around... And so many companies and
dude, it's such a testament to your power as a creative force. Here we are all these decades later. And I think back to like those origin days of collaboration, like going to those big parties and seeing you just like getting all these people amped up dancing and crazy, like impromptu performance is happening in the middle of some weird, you know, warehouse in Wicker Park or some crazy space, you know, in some neighborhood, right? You just show up and you go, it's a Collabor Action night, man. It's, who knows what's about to happen? It's wild, dude. And here you are just evolving the form of theater into where we need it to be today, which is exactly where you are. And I'm so proud of the fact that, like, you're not just rehashing the same thing that's worked to sell tickets for decades. It's like you're pushing into really just valuable, important stuff for the community that it makes me really honored to know that even in a small way, I've gotten to be a part of the Collabor Action journey, you know, participating in just a handful of productions over the year, but it still feels like family to me, you know?
Thank you so much for reflecting that to me, because as we get ready to, as I mentioned, we are going to be making a new space announcement soon. And, you know, we've been without a home for about 41 months. And I need to remember that secret sauce that I brought to the game when I was first starting up, you know, and that just came from my stomach and my heart. It didn't come from my brain. And the longer we go, you know, you start to kind of like go into this form, you know, and I've always tried to buck it, but this new space, the old thing of sitting in the dark for 2 hours in rows, watching a panorama of a bunch of old rich white people, that is dead. And anything that's like it is not going to succeed in this new world.
No. And it's just there's a purpose for museums and there's a purpose for gardens in our world. And you've got a garden, man, and yeah, it's growing, thriving, and it's beautiful. And yeah, I can't wait for you to have that space. You deserve it. And I think about all the different spaces that I've gotten to see you exist in over the years. And yeah, man, getting to come and commune with you and create with you. You are a conductor, brother. You're like an energy conductor, and you and your incredible family, and then your family of artists that surround you. And it's like a little echo that just continues to reverberate out into the world. And as you know, you talk about the numbers of connections that you run into in Chicago, but I feel that same way. I love it when somebody, you know, I connect with out here and they go, oh, Chicago, yeah, and da, da, da. Do you ever do anything with this company? Or, oh man, I was a sketchbook this year. I did this thing with that. And I said, oh man, it's just wild, dude. It's so cool. I'm so lucky I get to be a part of it. And I'm lucky I get to talk to you today, man. I've been talking my ass off when I'm not, I've been shooting this new show up in Toronto. Really, like 5 to 6 days a week, we're working on that thing, which is awesome. But those are long ass days, and then in between, I'm out, you know, beating the PR drum on my movie. And you know, I always try to find the windows of opportunity when I'm getting to talk to any audience or people, you know, any platform I'm given, whether it's some local, you know, news channel or some magazine that, you know, I've got issues and things that I care about more than just promoting commerce. I haven't gotten to have a conversation like this in a while where we can just let our hair down. I can take my top off, just kick back, put my feet up, and strum the banjo with you, my man.
I actually had a little an idea to have you and I bust out a quick brainstorm of some social change. We like what look, I'm going to take you through a collaborative action.
Yeah.
And then we're going to turn the lights off in the studio, and together we're going to turn, not yet. And then together we're going to turn that little thing that we came up with into a scary story. Are you game for that?
I'm totally game, man.
All right. And we can both do Foley work too. Okay, here we go. Are you ready?
Ready.
Just for my organic line of questioning, nothing else. And folks, I mentioned last night with the devil, watch it in the theater if it's still out. I think it's still out, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got it probably another week in cinemas, and Chicago has been very good to us. We've had a lot of people turning up in Chicago, which is great to know. Please go see Late Night with the Devil. We're in theaters for about another week, and then we move on to a streaming platform that's really awesome, AMC Plus and Shudder. But it is a fun one to see at the cinema, sitting next to your bros and your pals, just getting scared.
Sandra, Stella, and I loved it. It was like a great movie to go see with your teen if your family's like into scary stuff and exorcists and stuff like that. And the metaphor is wonderful, and I do wonder, you know, like, as a nice guy in Hollywood making a metaphor about making a deal with the devil, you know, and then you get more juice, you get higher in the rankings of the machine of Hollywood, and all of a sudden, you know, you got to make sure you don't make a deal with the devil about a deal with the devil. So, and I don't want to talk about the movie too much because there's so much out about it. And we're writing this into the ledger of space time. And in 40 years, David's grandchild will find this and listen to this about grandpa and what it was like in 2024. So that's really what we're going to talk about. The one thing I do want to say to you personally is, this character like wasn't like a demon or a pervert, or like, it was just, and it was so good to see you playing you, because I know what a good, relatable, like, just pure dude you are, you know, and you always play these really unique characters because you got some unique features and you know how to use them. But it was cool to see you put out there kind of like just this guy who is a late night talk show host and a part of you that I hadn't seen that much out there.
Well, thanks, dude. Thanks, Ant.
I'm going to cut you off and just get into the, because I got like not even 20 minutes here.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Let's start.
Get me in there.
What is the, how's your family and what is fatherhood teaching you?
Everybody's great. Fatherhood is teaching me a new lesson every day. Oh my goodness. The importance and value of creating safety, the importance and value of what safety means to people, how to create safe and secure attachment. Secure attachment is really everything. The way in which we navigate conflict, the way in which we navigate the ups, the downs, the day to day, just struggle of being a human being. It's like, wow, man, how can I help these kids feel completely safe existing in a space where they can, you know, come to conclusions, make decisions, make discoveries, make amends even, and learn, how to do so in a way that they don't feel, you know, denied of the safety and security that helps a human thrive, but they also don't feel inundated with too much. And I'm seeing what's so beautiful about when people who do choose to take the parenting route, I know it's not for everybody, but for those of us who've taken that path, one really cool thing is that kind of, you know, daily mirror reflection that you look at and you go, why are they doing this thing, man? It's so extreme. And then, you know, if you got a great partner, a good therapist or good allies around you, somebody goes, hey, man, you know that thing that you do? You know, it's kind of interesting how this stuff works, right? Kind of wild. So anyway, yeah, I could go on and on about it, but I know, you know, it's just a gift and everybody's doing well. Thank you for asking. Trying to have a very art forward and, socially progressive kind of community building household in which we're constantly looking to break down the paradigms and the dogma in which, you know, we were raised, my partner and I, and it's tricky sometimes, man, but there's also a lot of wonderful people out here to give you a hand or go play in the park or go run around the garden, get muddy with, you know.
And your wife is a super talented artist, and, you know, I think that, you know, parents that can make work and raise their kids together, it's It's a special little family verse, you know, and that's what we have. We just have a tiny little family with Stella and Coda, our mini Bernadoodle. But man,
I love it.
It's the most precious thing. And I love your family. You're beautiful. Okay, let's go to the David Desmalchian origin story. You are a multi-hyphenate artist, creator, producer, storyteller, thinker on many mediums. You've established yourself firmly. How did you get here? And I'm more interested in the stuff like before the age of 10.
You know, pre-10 was beautiful and tricky, just like it is for all of us. You know, big T, little T trauma, big J, little J joy, a lot of conflict of thought. I grew up in the American Midwest in, you know, suburbia, predominantly white community, where ideas that were planted in me had a lot to do with the patriarchy and the way that, you know, the capitalist society has kind of broken down the structure of how everybody kind of fits into their certain, you know, operating pieces of the machine. And I bit it and I ate it and I swallowed it, hook, line, and sinker, man. And then that all crashed into a collision of conscience that started to really get wild around age 9, 10, parental divorce, starting to see through some of the fallacies of a lot of the kind of more dogmatic ideologies I've been raised with, a lot of the more separatist ideologies I've been raised with, and struggling deeply with depression and anxiety led to my own mental health struggles, which along a very exciting, vibrant journey of lots of joy, lots of adventure, lots of parties and good times and being creative, I also developed some real dangerous habits for how to soothe myself and how to deal with my, you know, anxieties and attachment disorders and personality disorders. And a lot of that led me right down the path of addiction, which nearly cost me my life. But in the process of all that, I had some incredible experiences making and learning about art. By the time I finally got myself into the space of living a new journey, clean and sober, investing in my mental health, I was given basically a second life, a resurrection, if you will, in the Chicago theater community, where people like yourself gave me opportunities to create and tell stories. People like yourself led to people like David O'Connor giving me chances to audition for commercials. Those commercials led to me being able to start putting a little bread in my pocket that helped me get out of some of the bridge-burning, you know, repair work I needed to do on my past. And then, by miraculous of miraculous, you know, there's that thing about being an artist and an actor where it's like there is this luck factor that anybody who tries to say there isn't is, I think, deluded, because I happen to be in a room one day where a guy who had seen a commercial that I was in, which had been cast by David O'Connor, who had come up to me after seeing me in a collaboration show, says, "Are you the guy in that commercial?" I said, "I sure am." And he said, "Oh, man," he brings me to the front of the line of about 100 Chicago actors auditioning for a one-line role in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. I end up having prepared the hell out of that audition in such a way that I don't think they saw what was coming. And it ended up leading to me getting my first break in a feature film, which has led to, with, you know, lots of fits and starts and lots of, you know, being, you know, food insecure and housing insecure and financially unstable and stressed about medical and all these things over the last 15 years, I'm now sitting in a pretty incredible pool of gratitude. It's just like you imagine me right now, close your eyes, see a dude floating in a hot tub. The gratitude is right up to my chin, and I am grinning because all the odds and statistics say I shouldn't even be alive, let alone sitting here getting to make art. And now I have an opportunity to really steer the ship of some of my own projects and hopefully leave, some kind of footprint on the earth, my kids, and the communities in which I get the great fortune of living in.
Beautiful. And, you know, the nice thing about those hot tubs is that you can fart whenever you want. Nobody knows you farted, who farted. It's just, it's like fart free.
Here's the problem, man. Here's the problem, though. Mine have a very distinct aroma. And the watery bubbles, when they carry them to the surface, you can't hide that.
They turn green. They turn green.
You're sitting close to me, which my kids do. They go, Dad. I go, what are you talking about? It's the thing. It's the bubble maker.
On the airplane is the worst, right? So my next question, you answered it. And the question was, what has your trauma gifted you? And you answered it. You answered it in your story. How old were you when your parents got divorced?
The separation started at age 10, not going to 9 and 10. 9 and 10. I went from a house of 6 people to all of a sudden a house of 2 people, because my siblings are all much older than me, and they all flew the coop right around the time that my parents finally split, which needed to happen, but the way it went down was gnarly. And I was kind of left to my devices in a lot of ways, and mental health services were not provided. I was raised in a very religious community, so there was a lot of, you know, spiritual or religious, if you will, I wouldn't even say spiritual, maybe more religious kind of counseling offered. But I think I really needed to be talking to like a licensed probably therapist, psychologist, if possible.
So my parents got divorced in 86, which is probably around the same year yours did.
Mine was 85.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. Like the Bears won the Super Bowl, and then it all went downhill from there. And I think I'm a couple years older than you. And
we had the Royals win the World Series, and then the next I was on top of the world, and then a few months later my world was done.
So and so I got all depressed and I stopped talking. And I was very talkative, David. And I, around my mom and dad and at home, I just was quiet. My parents got really worried. So my dad was a Vietnam veteran with PTSD, Airborne Ranger, Purple Heart, 2 tours, killed a lot of people. I consider myself a secondary PTSD survivor because of all of that and the things I got access to at a young age. Dad used to go take me to sleep a tune with him on a Wednesday night matinee and Full Metal Jacket when I was 13 or 14. And afterwards, he'd say, yeah, that Charlie Sheen character, that was as close as I've seen to what I went through. And then I would have, and I would see Willem Dafoe, you know, screaming in the jungle. And actually, when my father was in the hospital with cancer, I started having these vivid, overactive imaginations about all the people he killed in Vietnam, their ghosts coming back to try to kill me before my dad died.
Wow.
And I started thinking about it as a screenplay. I was like, okay, I'm going to do something with this. And I wrote a screenplay in my head as my way of coping with it all. But anyways, more. Wow. I want to talk about you. Well, we do have some, there's some interesting parallels there in our trauma and our lives, and maybe it makes sense why we like each other so much. Okay. What is a social change issue that really is on your heart right now?
There's so many, brother. There's so many right now. I am in the United States really feeling a lot of anger over body autonomy and women's rights to govern their own bodies and the safety that's being taken away by the hour right now for our fellow citizens. And it's really that's going on right now. But I will say, I'd like to say, I know that there's so many things that are on everybody's minds and hearts right now. I think that, you know, what's going on with the way that we've separated ourselves through invisible lines when it comes to the way we look at, you know, concepts and ideologies and dogmas like citizenship and immigration have been really tricky for me to feel anything other than like trying to radically insert myself into any way I can with financial support and on the ground support to, you know, revolutionizing the way we look and think about people who, you know, happen to live in a different geographical location than ourselves. That's been really hard. And because it impacts me, but even if it didn't, I like to believe that it would still be very big on my heart right now, what's going on with the LGBTQ community and threats against, you know, people of all ages. And I will say one thing, because I want to get into this exercise with you. because I do feel as I've started to make, you know, more opportunities happen in the acting business. Like, it feels good, of course, the end of the year for any of us, no matter where we are in our, you know, financial bracket, to like make those donations and do those tax deductible, you know, donations to organizations, arts organizations, and you know, social and political groups that we care about, which I, you know, it does feel good to my heart. But I was feeling the calling to get more. I need more opportunity to get fingers dirty and hands, you know, involved. And so I started a gathering at my place when I'm in town once a month called the Humble Men, because it felt like our country's filled with so many prideful little boys, so many proud boys that just feel entitled to be stomping on people of color and people from different, you know, socioeconomic realities, people who were born in different places, people who may look or present differently than they do. And I'm tired of being in a place of privilege as a white, man who is, living in that quantifiable highest rank of privilege in this country and not doing something. So just getting a group of dudes together once a month, and we bring in, you know, a rep from Planned Parenthood or a rep from GLAAD or a rep from one of our local community organizations to say what we can do for some of my friends who maybe can't write a check at the end of the year, or those of us who just want to get together and instead of going to a movie, maybe once a month we're going to go and help here, delivering, you know, medicine, blah, blah. So that's where I'm at right now. It's, as you know, big on my heart. I get into some conflict sometimes, and I don't always hold my tongue, but I don't think we should. I think especially in times of great, you know, oppression, it's important for loud voices. But I do want to be effective. So I'm trying to find a way to speak from my heart and still connect with people's hearts, as opposed to shoving more cotton in people's ears, which is hard. Got a lot of learning to do, my man. And you know what? I love looking at you, because even if we don't get to talk as often as we would like, through social media and through the email updates, and when I, you know, get to click on and see what you guys are doing, you're one of the dozens of people who are very inspiring to me right now, including groups like Sister District, who I try and do Zoom calls with their volunteers. We got to get those down ballot elections more educated. We got to get people understanding how circuit courts work. We got to get people understanding how we can make real change without getting distracted by the shiny thing that, you know, corporate television and news in America wants us to think is where it's at. There's my rant. I'm getting off my soapbox now. But, dude, wow.
Dude, yeah. Please don't do that. Just wear platform soapbox boots. You know what I'm saying? Don't get it.
I can dance, baby. You know I can dance.
Yeah, you
can
throw some goldfish in them.
I can't.
Especially as white men with power, privilege, and influence, we need to understand humility, and we need to understand that we have to do work on ourselves. We have to teach ourselves. We have to do work to erase our blind spots. And it's not our fault that we were born with blind. Everybody is born with pure ignorance, and life slowly erases it. But there's some stuff that nobody can get to but you.
Yeah, yeah. We're like computers, man. And the original people that were in there hardwiring us were the people that got their first hands on. And that is the media which we were fed, the communities in which we were raised. And but we have the... If we have the humility, we have the capacity, we do have an opportunity for us to get in there and do that hard work and rewire that stuff. And it's, you know, how we look at you know, people through the lens of gender, through the lens of race, through the lens of socioeconomics, through the lens of, you know, countries of origin, through the lens of so many different factors that, like, dude, I mean, it's as simple as, like, some of the ways... These people are bad. These people are the devil. These people are lazy. These people are this. And you tell a kid that's what a kid believes. You're the grown up figure of importance. Well, it's okay to do this to a woman. It's okay to do this. It's just programming. So we got to. And I suck at. Sometimes I get really disappointed in myself, because after all this time, and I care deeply. You know, I care deeply. I still fall into problematic thinking. I can still fall into,
but it's catching yourself.
Stay on the couch or just lay in bed when I know I'm like, you know what, tan today. Sorry.
But catching yourself having those moments, you know, and even as a white man, catching myself, you know, I don't do it anymore. But 10 years ago, when I really started doing the work, I would catch myself having negative little racist and misogynistic echoes in my head. And yeah. then I go, yeah. but it's the fact that you catch them. That's part of the process. And that's how you change. Okay. So we're running out of time. And I so appreciate you joining in this in your busy schedule. Let's just run a quick exercise.
Okay.
Reverse engineering an artistic experience that we want to create change in men with privilege. Let's just say that. That's the change we're trying to create. We're trying to get them to look in the mirror and see what's really there. Are you cool with that as our change issue?
I love it. Okay. I love that's our change issue.
And then the, you know, Clever Action, the way we really do it is we reverse engineer something through a process of inquiry. So what are a few questions that we would want to ask ourselves in the audience if we're trying to tell a story about privileged white men or rich men? They don't have to be white. Give me a couple questions you think we might want to ask.
What's an example of something that surrounds men of privilege on a daily basis that they don't clock the discrepancy between their privilege and the others' lack thereof?
Brilliant.
What is something that's on a daily basis surrounding men of privilege that they're not clocking, even if it's staring them right in the face?
Yes. And what, brainstorm quick. Let's what are ideas of that?
I think seeing people with housing insecurity on a daily basis and walking right past it. I think the way that they interact and maybe don't have full cognition of those who are economically distressed because of a system that oppresses people at different levels of our society and the way that they're compensated for the amount of work that they do to chip in.
Love it. Okay. Next. What's another question that we might want to raise?
How much responsibility? This is a hard one. This is the kind of thing you make a whole play, maybe a whole season about. How much responsibility does a man in a position of powerful privilege in our society? How much responsibility? Which obligation is that? The word, maybe it's just responsibility. Does he? Should he? I don't know what the right word is there. Does he, should he have towards the community around him, especially through the lens of those who are underprivileged? Because there are those amongst us who say, that's social Darwinism, brother. You're top of the food chain. Eat all you can eat and put your name on everything. Slap it on there, even if you don't own it, and make the Chicago River look ugly as hell because you put your ugly name on it. Sorry.
Okay. So for the, no, yes, yes, yes. And so now what we would do is we would look at content and form, right? And we kind of like spin those wheels until we found something that really fit well. While you were talking, let's go ahead and turn off the lights, Paul. While you were talking, I started seeing a character who just walks through the world and is able to act with a kind of confidence and a swagger and a selfishness. And he kind of leaves a little trail of grease in his wake that he doesn't even know that he does. And maybe he lives his life with privilege. Maybe he works at a bank. Maybe he sells something toxic. And he, everything is going his way. And then one day he wakes up. And he's like 65 years old, and he's in a hospital, and he's got a maybe a Latina woman who's been, maybe he's in his private hospital in his big mansion, and he's got like this Latina woman who is maybe just come here, and she is his caretaker, and his family is all gone, and he's been in a coma, but he had so much money, and he said, if I ever go into a coma, you spend my money, you keep me alive, because I am coming back. So now, David, I'm going to pass it to you, and you could add, change, remix, or just do it double D style. I got the lights. I got the lights off in the studio.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead and tell that scary story to a little 9-year-old who's going to bed.
Okay. It's a very bright, beautiful time in Jack's life. He walks through the world with passing every window, every mirror on his way to his top floor office at the Bank of Exploitation, where he is a titan of industry and sits upon the highest levels of the lap of luxury. And he's surrounded by people smiling, a very clean world, a world where all of his transgressions against the environment, against his fellow man, aren't even clocked, because he's doing such great things by accumulating so much, by producing so much, by making so much happen, that the serotonin levels to him feel great. His spirit feels good. He actually has a religious practice that he participates in and feels good about in himself. And he,
our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name,
gets very sick. And all of a sudden, he slips into a coma, and this man had left the longest, strongest, most well-executed will that had ever been known to man. And when he wakes up from this coma because of the instructions he left behind, and there's this beeping of his heart on this monitor in this mansion, in this palatial, big fortress that he constructed over the years. This place that looked like Tower of Gold. It was like the tower. His name was on everything, the gold tower. Everything was made of gold. But when he wakes up, and this woman who has darker skin and her voice sounds a little different, and she's there doing the simplest things, like administering small amounts of medicine, tending to him. He's so weak. His body is so fragile now. And everything looks different. It's the most horrifying thing Jack has ever seen. He struggles to climb out of the bed because what looked like a golden palace to him, he realizes, doesn't look like a golden palace at all. It looks like a thing that's just made of materials that are going to corrode and eventually pollute the environment. And he looks out the window and he sees people struggling and suffering to be able to build the bricks of the things that led to these architectures of what brought him great wealth. And he's wrapped with fear, and he's grotesque with all of the confusion. He says to this woman, "Did I wake up in hell?" And she says, "No, no, sir, no, sir, no, sir. It's just part of the condition of your... one of the conditions of your recovery right now is we can't put the glasses back on you." What glasses? What are you talking about? And looking in the corner, his memory goes back to when he was a younger man. He was just becoming so powerful in this beautiful, state-of-the-art, high-tech, Apple-designed glasses that they were only able to be purchased by people at his level. His power were able to just give him this view of the world that was everything that he wanted to see and nothing he didn't want to see. But you had to put a lot of money into it. You had to put a lot of success into it. You had to put a lot of power into it. And unfortunately, now that he's come back from this near-death experience, putting those back on would kill him instantly. And this woman who he looks at with such disgust, he thinks, "Why are you the one taking care of me? I should have the finest doctors from Cedars Sinai, all the way to every great hospital across the world. And she says, I'm who they got for you, sir, and I'm trying to take care of you. Here's some food. Here's something. And he looks at her, and he goes back to the window. He looks at the world around him. He turns on the television. He looks at this horrifying nightmare of a world around him. And he can't handle it. And he stumbles over to the glasses, and the woman screams. She screams a blood-curdling scream. Don't do it. Don't do it, Jack. It'll kill you. But he'd rather put those glasses back on. He'd rather see through that rose, if not gold-tinted lens of his view of how beautifully he fit into all of it with no cognition of any of the consequences of his behavior, his power, his lack of any awareness. He'd rather get one last view through that lens than live a life without those glasses on. And as soon as he puts those things on his face, the skin starts to fall off his face. His heart starts to beat out of his chest. He lets out a scream that can be heard throughout the house. He collapses on the floor. And he's dead.
What's the name of that story, David?
The glasses? I don't know. What do you think?
I was wondering if you could just call it responsibility.
Responsibility. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Or a lack thereof.
A lack thereof. A play in one part.
What if the name of the...
Do you think that would scare the kids? You would scare the kids?
What if it was just called... What if the title of it was just A Lack Thereof?
A lack thereof. That's it, man. Coming soon to a Chicago stage near you. A lack thereof.
Yeah.
The story of Jack.
Yeah. Wait, you'll play Jack, and I'll direct it, and we'll do like a weekend of it at Collaboration.
Dude, I mean, when we did the last time we collaborated, we were back in the show pan, and the use of multimedia, which you've always been open. I think you did a lot of groundbreaking stuff for Chicago theater back in the day when you said, guys, why are we afraid to throw cameras and screens and video monitors on a stage? Why can't we use every tool at our disposal? So we did a lot of that work, me and Sandra up there, basically a couple walking back through the entirety of their lives. And I was just thinking about this Jack story and this guy that's got this PR kind of headset on.
Yes.
And he's walking through a world of complete and utter degradation, but he's got that lens on. And you wore beautiful.
And you wore those glasses.
And I wore it.
I found some great photos of you. And then, of course, there was when you had to go... jump into
you did it. Twin Peaks
with David Lynch.
Yeah.
You're like, Mose, you said, you know, if I had to go, I would go, and you would jump in for me.
and
the photos of me and Sandra laying like that, because you're so long and slender, and I'm a little more built like a left tackle. And and it's just, I'm like, and it made me realize, like, that's what we look like in bed. I'm much larger than my wife, and I have a large torso and a big head. David, thank you so much. It was so fun to play with you. Paul, would you turn back the lights on? We did. This is the only second time we've ever turned the lights off in the studio. But
I'm honored.
And your face while you were telling the story, it was just like you were, your eyes were closed. You were like... I love it. It was so great. It was so great. Thank you for joining us. And
Love you, man.
I love you too.
I love you very much. And I love what you do for the city of Chicago and for theater as an art form. And please give my love to your beautiful family, Sandra and Stella. And what's the pup's name?
Coda.
All right.
And you keep on setting a model that shows that nice guys can be successful without turning into jerks and can also take a stand for those who have less and a smaller platform. And that's, I think of, that's what, when I think of you, I think of that, and you've been doing it. Stay with it. And, I know you will, because it's who you are. And part of it is the trauma that you survived. You learned how to use it to make you a superhero, that more of a wizard who actually can manifest and change. And we can all do that. Thank you for setting the example. I love you. Thanks for being with us on Collaborative Action Radio, brother.
Love you.
David Smalchin.
Love you.
That was fun. Man, I get to make a radio show and just hang out with my friend as if we were having a beer, but we're just here talking. I mean, I needed a meeting with that dude for a while just to say hi, you know, and to do it on the air with y'all. It's just an honor. And sometimes I need to stop and remember that, man, I've been doing this for a little while, and I'm sure you have been too, whatever you're doing, because that's how life works. Unless you're like, you know, under the age of 30, and then just be glad that you're under the age of 30. But the rest of us, keep on doing what you're doing and figure out what piece of power, privilege, and influence you can share with others. And I'll join you in that commitment, and I'll raise you 5. Thank you so much for joining us here on Collaboration Radio. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Next week, we have Doug Fogelson on the show. He has a really great project that helps people break down and gives you a system for doing something about climate change. It's called One Year for Earth, or 1Y4E. And Doug's going to be walking us through that and creating some simple tactics that can make sure we are more Earth inclined, because humans, we really need Earth. Earth doesn't need us so much, but boy, we need it. And our ancestors need it too. So have a great day, everybody. It's a Saturday here in Chicago. We got a couple more hours of sun, and we're alive, so let's do something with it. Oh, I remembered I'm alive again. Good. All right. Let's try not to forget.
The preceding program, Collaboration Radio, is sponsored by Collaboration and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.